Reaching the front door of the temple, Christy and Dean paused to listen as the Sekhmen shouted outside. Then somebody knocked hard on the door and demanded admittance.
Open the door!
The woman and boy drew their weapons as the person tried the lock several times, but after a while the guard went away. However, both of the companions knew the guards would return soon with tools and a lot more men. Unraveling the tangle of shackles and chains from the torture tables, the pair wrapped three of the lengths around the wooden bar, locking the shackles onto each other to hold the knot tightly. Christy looked in satisfaction when they were done.
Nobody's getting through that without explos.
Dean looked down at the arrival of the first trickle of the water.
Looks like we finished just in time, too.
Expanding along the floor, the water puddled in front of the massive door, then began to seep outside. Almost immediately, there were more shouts and someone threw himself against the door, rattling the chains. Then another joined the effort, their curses audible through the slim cracks along the jamb.
What the hell is that noise? Sounds like chains.
Why would the Baron chain the temple shut?
He wouldn't, you Phoebe. Get Hawk! We need a battering ram.
Moving fast, the woman and boy retreated into the tunnel, and Christy locked the iron grill while Dean kept guard with his crossbow. Then they both raced back to the temple, closed the set of double doors, and looped the last chain through the handles. Christy then held the first and last link of the chain on top of each other and placed a dagger from the armory through the loops. Lowering the crossbow, Dean drew his Browning high power and hammered the dagger into the wooden door in lieu of a stake. It wasn't much, but the knife would at least keep the chains from simply slipping off the handles when folks started banging to get inside. They knew that none of these things would hold off a truly determined force, but all of this would buy them time and make the Baron waste a lot of troops trying to get inside and capture them. Hopefully, that would be enough. Returning to the armory through the Iron Maiden, Christy closed the hinged hatch while Dean dragged over an empty wooden barrel. Together, they started to toss in any loose items available, tools, blasters, ammo, grinding stones, until the barrel was heaped high. Then they both dusted off their hands.
Gotta be a good half ton of junk there. That'll slow them down some.
Busy at a work table, Doc merely grunted in reply. The old man was busy making firebrands, using bits of stiff wire to attach short pieces of the rope fuse to crossbow arrows. Mildred was stuffing the completed products into a patched duffel bag, and Jack was nearby stringing a crossbow, a stack of four more nearby.
How'd it go?
The door is solid, but the Sekhmen are already trying to get inside.
So soon? Damn!
Dean walked over to the people at the workbench.
Need any help?
Thank you, but this is the final batch.
Doc handed Mildred the last arrow.
Especially since Ryan took the rest of the fuse.
Dean looked around to see the huge coils of ropey fuses were missing from the wall pegs. The boy frowned.
He took all of it? What for?
See yourself.
Jack loaded his arms with crossbows.
But watch step.
Heading for the pump room, the friends paused as they spied JB on his knees, playing a candle along a piece of the copper wire stretched knee-high across the open doorway. The flickering flame was slowly turning the red metal a dark brown, almost invisible in the dim recesses of the temple.
Hold it!
JB turned off the nuke lamp, and the tripwire was gone, invisible in the darkness.
Okay.
JB turned the lamp back on.
But watch your step.
Once on the other side of the trap, Dean observed his surroundings.
First person through that door is going to discover a world of pain.
Mildred shifted her duffel bag of firebrands.
Yeah, for about a half a second.
Glancing at the feeder pipe, Jack saw the wheel was wired to blow, as was the grin at the door. Whatever else happened, the water shortage in the Ville was going to end tonight. That was for damn sure. Doc stepped over the tripwire with exaggerated caution.
Where is Ryan?
Tucking the candle into a pocket, JB jerked a thumb at the open hatch in the roof at the top of the ladder.
Making sure we can leave.
But interrupting those words was a fast series of soft chugs from the hatch. Drawing weapons, the companions scrambled up the ladder and onto the top of the temple. The last in line, Christy caught the stock of the H&H Nitro on the hatch for a moment and had to wiggle about to get through. The damn blaster was over 5 feet in length, much too long for such cramped quarters. Standing in the shadows, Ryan was sweeping the edge of the building with the Sig Sauer. He froze as a hand slithered into view near the corner, but did nothing until the head of the Sec man rose into view. Instantly, Ryan fired, and the man fell backward with a bloody crater in place of a nose. Going to the edge, Ryan fired twice more, and another man cried out briefly.
Fire blast. Too many damn people know about the roof hatch. And somebody with a brain is going to figure out why there's a pile of bodies in the street, at which point we're shit out of luck.
Let's get to it.
Jack passed out the crossbows. Overburdened with weapons, the companions dropped their backpacks to take the weapons and got busy knocking the firebrands.
Think we can reach the motel from here?
Mildred licked a finger to test the direction of the desert wind. Simple logic dictated what the plan was. She only hoped they could pull it off. They had been in tight scrapes before, but they were doing a night creep on an entire vill. One wrong move would expose them, and then it was all over. Ryan looked across the vill.
The bows have the range. It's just a matter of if we can hit the target.
Stepping on the crossbar of his crossbow to grab the string in both hands, JB pulled it upward until the cord caught on the tongue. Lifting the weapon, he slipped in a firebrand.
Ranging shot.
JB touched the rope with his butane lighter. As the fuse sputtered into life, he raised the crossbow and pressed the trigger. The flaming arrows arced over the vill to drop beyond the motel a dozen blocks away.
Try 10 o'clock instead of 11.
JB reloaded and lowered the angle.
All together. Ready? Shoot!
The companions launched in unison, the flurry of arrows soaring high to plummet down into the open courtyard around the motel. Bursting from the building, Jed and Sparrow came running out with blasters drawn, both of their dogs baying wildly.
Again!
Tiny dots of light began moving along the top of the adobe wall. The sentries had spotted the firebrands.
Shift more into the wind!
The crossbows were armed once more, and the next flight went over the motel, one arrow spiraling away randomly to disappear into the distance.
The fuse came free and threw off the balance.
Suddenly, a chorus of voices rose from the opposite side of the temple, closely followed by a tremendous crash of splintering wood. Then it came again and again.
Sounds as if the Sec men are busting through!
Check the wires.
JB ran his fingers along the shaft of an arrow.
This volley has got to be on target.
Locking his crossbow and reloading, Jack saw a man carrying a long blaster appear on a roof a few buildings away. Only a Sec man would have a weapon like that, so Jack fired. The unlit arrow flew straight and hit the man in the stomach, partially going through. Dropping the blaster, the man clutched the shaft sticking out of his belly and shrieked in pain. Squinting in that direction, Ryan chanced two shots with the Sig Sauer, but the wounded man was masked by the darkness and kept on screaming. Having no choice, Ryan slid the Steyr off his shoulder, placed the crosshairs on the Sec man's chest, and put a 7.62mm round through his heart, ending the cries. But the crack of the sniper rifle rolled over the vill, and most of the voices on the street stopped shouting.
If they come to this side and find the bodies, we're screwed. There's no canopy over here to hide the arrows. Load and fire at will, but hit that triple damn wag right now!
Fast and furious, the companions loaded and fired as quickly as possible, flaming arrows raining all over the area, setting fire to the roof of the motel and smashing to pieces on the streets. When the wind slowed for a moment, they sent off the last flurry of arrows. Climbing high toward the stars, the firebrands curved sharply earthward and slammed all over the wag, penetrating the cab, the hood, and several going through the tattered canvas awning over the rear. Only seconds later, a fire woofed out the back of the wag from the punctured fuel cans, tongues of flame licking from every hole in the canvas. Some Sec man hidden behind the wag started running, but it was already too late. The deafening explosion illuminated the entire vill in a blinding flash of light and rattled shutters for blocks in every direction. Caught near the blast, the Sec men were slapped off the ground and sent tumbling through the air like burning rag dolls to hit the side of other buildings with lethal results. Then, from the boiling inferno of the barn came a series of sharp bangs, and a new fireball boiled upward, spraying out debris as the cans of condensed fuel rocketed into the air and detonated above the vill. By now, every window was open. Illuminated by the reddish glare of the rising fireball, the companions ducked low on the roof of the temple to try to stay in the shadows. Blaster in hand, Ryan gave a short whistle and jerked a finger at the front of the temple. Dropping to his belly, Jack crawled to the edge of the roof, listened, and then chanced a peek. Turning to face the others, he nodded and gave a thumbs up.
Okay, they're off to check the explosion. That bought us time, but not a hell of a nuking lot.
Time to reload. Deathlands is continued on the next CD.